Good afternoon. This is Jeff Bellier with the Mind Goal Hour. Thanks for tuning in to your laptop or your computer, wherever you are, at work, at home, or on the road if you've got a wireless in your car. This is the Mind Goal Hour. We talk about goal achievement strategies, and we talk about balancing practical goal setting and goal achievement methods with what I call inner work. And today, I want to keep a balance, but today I'm going to spend more time on the inner work. It occurred to me as I was looking at pie. By the way, if you're a new listener, listeners know that I always serve up pie with my show. You get pie, it's the first thing we do. And pie is an acronym for primary inner exploration. And what I ask you to do is to look at eight areas of your life. So there are eight pieces of pie. And I reiterate those every week. It occurred to me during this week that they really the pie kind of splits in half. I talk about very practical steps and writing down our goals and what we like about what's happening in these different areas of our life and what we'd like to see happen, what would be the best thing that could happen, and what would be our ultimate goal. And let me tell you the eight pieces of pie, and we'll talk about how it occurred to me that they break down. We talk about health and fitness, what kind of goals we have, what kind of lifestyle we're leading, what we're eating. I happen to be a vegan. My wife's a raw foodist, so she serves me a lot of raw food. And as I speak to you from the home studio, I look out over the Gulf of Mexico in beautiful St. Pete, Florida. And so it's a very healthy place in the Sunshine State. And we do Bikram yoga. We walk every night. So we stay very healthy and trim and swim. I talk about career, where we are in our career, where we'd like to go with it. What we like about it, what we don't like about it, what would be our ideal, where we live, our home, what we like about it, what we'd like to see improved in it, where we'd ultimately like to be. And we talk about relationships at home, at work, in our community, just a variety of relationships, how we deal with those. And those I see as pretty concrete, if you will, or rational process that we look at those and identify those. And we just kind of take that through our thinking mind. Another thing in mind goal, when we talk about do you have a goal in mind, for me the goal of the mind is to achieve or re-achieve, if you will, balance. We have become, and simply by being socialized or socially coerced from the time we were young, we're taught to think and to rely on our rational mind to the point where that really becomes our primary identity, that we are thinking beings and that's how we think of ourselves. Well, there's another side to us. Now, I will call it intuitive. You may want to call it spiritual or even creative. Intuitive works for me. Spiritual certainly works for me. And that is an area that I believe is critical to properly identifying our goals, to clearly identifying our goals, because there's a certain reclaiming of who we are, our sense of self, our self-realization, our self-awareness, and that's taught in many, many disciplines, that really has us look at our life in a whole new light. So let me go to the other half of the pie. I'll give you the top half, if you will, the health and fitness, career, where we live, our relationships. The bottom of the pie in the eight pieces that I set up is a legacy, our legacy we want to leave in this world, our mission in this world, our sense of self, or self-realization, self-awareness, and our community spirit, our team spirit, our sense of being in a neighborhood, a community, a corporation, a sports team, but how we feel about our connection with other people. And what occurred to me this week is that as I look at these eight pieces of pie, and I'll be redundant, this is radio, and and redundancy works. As I look at these, as I said earlier, that health and fitness, career, where we live, those are concrete. Those we see, we know we're doing. Our relationships, those are pretty clear to us. But when we start thinking of legacy, what sort of legacy do I want to leave? What will my life have meant on this earth? Will I leave it a better place than when I came? What will I have contributed to this life? That isn't something that's right out there for us to instantly recognize and identify. That is when I feel that I can provide you with some valuable tools for going inside, going into a higher self or a higher intelligence or intuitive self or kingdom within, depending on your orientation, your discipline, but a sense of connection, a non-duality for those who are familiar with that we feel a sense of separation that we, again, we're socially coerced into feeling because we just feel we are a separate individual being, and we see that as our primary identity. But with inner work, and with some of the things we're going to talk about over the next 50 minutes or 55 minutes, there's another aspect, if you will, to life or that is really primary. And many of us, most of us, Thoreau said, well, most men live lives of quiet desperation, feel the sense of something missing, of not, they're not quite being the whole picture. The big questions that we carry around, what is my life about? What's the purpose in my life? What meaning does my life have? You know, we just kind of found ourselves here walking along the street one day at a certain age and said, wow, here I am in this body of breathing, living human being. And we look heavenward, we look at the sky, we look at the stars at night, and it just kind of looms here. What's going on? What am I doing here? What is my being all about? And those are the big questions. And the masters of the past, the teachers of today, the spiritual tradition, the mystics, very much involved in the mystic path. I teach a meditation called the Mystic Path Meditation, and we're going to talk about that today, and I'm going to even give you the tools for that and the outline of that and really spell it out. So you'll learn a meditation today, or another meditation if you're already a meditator. And if you're tuned into BBC Radio, you're probably pretty cosmic to begin with, because this is not mainstream. This is the whole reason for being for this internet radio station, as I understand it, and as I read about it, is because there are so many people now, more and more, who are sensing that we are in a time of transformation and transition as human beings. And those of us, if you'll pardon my speaking from an ivory tower for a minute, those of us who have had powerful changes in our life, who have gone through powerful transformation, who have awakened, if you will, sense that this is the destiny of mankind, that this is the destiny of humankind, that we are moving to a new level of awareness, a new level of consciousness. So you can call that Christ consciousness or cosmic consciousness or Krishna consciousness or whatever type of consciousness, non-dual realization, born again, any of those things in the real term, not in the watered down term, particularly that born again. I won't rail about that, only for a moment. But that sense of self that I mentioned in the bottom of the pie, that self-realization, I know, as I said, my wife and I do Bikram yoga. That's a hot yoga that it's 90 minutes in a room with 105 degrees. And Bikram, the originator of this and the teacher of this, often says that, we practice by his tape on occasion, and he says that we often underestimate ourselves. We underestimate our ability to be healthier and more fit, underestimate what we really can do with our career, underestimate what we can really bring to relationships. So those concrete things, the upper crust, the upper part of the pie that I mentioned, or the half of the pie, the rational half of the pie, will change. We will have a different view of that. We will look at our life in a whole new light as we open up our own realization. And it is a lack of self-realization, a lack of awareness, or lack of awakening that keeps us from realizing our full potential, from reaching our goal. And our goal is to know who we are. And those of us who are fortunate enough and blessed enough and gifted, it doesn't make us special in any way to have received the gift of awakening. It makes us especially aware, maybe, or especially grateful, but we are no different than any other human being on the planet in the sense that we breathe the same air, we feel the same way. And often, a teacher who comes along and says, I'm a mystic, I'm awakened, I experienced enlightenment on July 21st, 1975, at about 9:30 in the morning, it can be heard and seen and felt to be arrogant and self-aggrandizing or ego-aggrandizing, and that is really not what it's about. It's an effusion, an exuberance, an enthusiasm that says, wow, this feels so certainly like the destiny of mankind, that where human beings are going, that we are moving in this direction. And when you open scripture from the Bible, the Quran, Torah, Bhagavad Gita, the Tao, it's always there. The mystic past, the Sufis speak of it, that there are people who are not content to say, if I live my life a certain way by prescription, then I may or may not come into the presence of God in some afterlife heaven. that there are those who say, I want to know this now. I want that God realization, to call it that, or self-awareness, self-realization, cosmic consciousness, whatever kind of term works for you, non-dual realization. I'm trying to cover, keep everybody somewhat happy. That when we feel that longing to know who we are, that we will find ourselves at some point coming to that place of the deep inquiry or the seeking. Again, semantics can get in the way. There are some who say that the seeking is the problem, that we feel we just need to come to grips that this is it. But if there's a feeling of something missing, it isn't it. The feeling of something missing is a resonance that's going on within us that's impelling us or compelling us to seek to know who we are. And tuning into this radio station this afternoon, picking up a book in the library or a book that jumps off the shelf at you at a bookstore, however it might come to you, a photograph, a sound of a voice, someone wearing a pendant, somehow you find yourself listening to something that causes that tuning fork within you, that resonance within you to say, wait a minute, this person's talking about something that's on my mind. This is what I am occupied with in great part right now, and I want to hear more of this. And so what I plan to do is offer you more of it today and talk about the sense of self and that inner spirit, as the spiritual being, the transformed being that we can touch. I began teaching classes, I mentioned the date, July 21st, 1975 at 9:30 in the morning. That for me was a transforming moment. I was thunderstruck. I was repeating a mantra that said, let me die, let me die, let me die, let me die. I won't bore you with the stories of what brought me to that despair and degradation. But in the process of that pleading, I did die, only not in the way I expected. And a door opened for me, and I began teaching the very next day, and I'm coming up on 31 years that I've been teaching this pretty consistently in books that I've written and articles that I've published and in classes that I hold and now in this radio station. I began calling it an experience of pure intuitive consciousness. As I said, we have great rational linear process muscle, but what has atrophied for many of us and what is we lack an acknowledgement of, it's there, it's a matter of acknowledging it and realizing it, that it's there, is an intuitive side. And I'm not talking about an intuitive hunch of which horse will win the horse race or who will win the World Series. That may have a great application, but that's not really what I'm talking about. When I talk about an experience of pure intuitive consciousness, I'm talking about a realization that everything we thought about who we are in this life and our purpose and our place in this life suddenly changes dramatically. Everything about it changes. And so when we begin to explore the pi, the primary inner exploration, and we begin to say, what is the legacy I want to lead? If that leads us into another piece of pi, our mission, what particular mission do we have in this life? What is our sense of self? What is our community spirit? Those are all post-awakening, if you will, issues that will then go back and change those pre-awakening issues of health and fitness, career, where I live, and relationship. I haven't made that totally confusing. What I'm really talking about goal achievement strategies. On the practical linear process side, I believe it's valuable to address each of these eight areas that I've mentioned. I'm going to mention them once more. Health and fitness, that's one. Career, two. Where I live, three. Relationships, four. Legacy, five. Mission, six. Sense of self, seven. And our community spirit, our team spirit, our sense of togetherness or oneness with other people, eight. In those eight pieces of pie, I believe it's important, as best we can, even beginning or continuing on our search, or even, I need to say this right now, even acknowledging that we are finders, acknowledging that we are awakened. I find three audiences whenever I give a seminar or speak, or even doing a radio show, although I can't see you or feel you or know who's out there, I'm just speaking into a microphone. I know that my audience, if you will, is divided into three segments. And you'll fit into one of these. What I am saying resonates clearly within you, and you know it by direct personal experience. And you simply acknowledge it and say, I know what he's speaking of, and it resonates within me. It's been part of my direct experience. I know that there is possible in this lifetime a transformation, a shift from what I thought was my primary identity and my reality in this world to realizing that I was really living a secondary identity, that there is a primary identity that, well, Jesus had a great word for it. He said, you shall know the truth, and the truth shall set you free. That the knowledge of that primary identity, which only comes by direct experience, a knowledge of that, an awakening to that, is freedom from fear. It's absolute freedom from fear and doubt. I have a book out. Time to plug my book. Plug your ears. I've written a book called Taming the Lions of Fear and Doubt. You can find it on Amazon.com. You can find it on my website at MindGoal, M-I-N-D-G-O-A-L, like, do you have a goal in mind? MindGoal.com. Taming the Lions of Fear and Doubt is about taming those voices, that internal chatter, not shutting it off so that you never hear again, but taming those lions of fear and doubt, those guardians of our well-being. They were well-intentioned at a time when, you know, fear moved us out of the direct path of an oncoming truck, and doubt kept us from attempting to negotiate that great big puddle when we had brand new sneakers on at 4 or 5 years old. So they were valuable, but what happened as we were more and more socially coerced, fear and doubt took over our lives, became masters of our lives. And my book, Taming the Lions of Fear and Doubt, says we can tame that internal chatter. We can quiet it and use it when it's appropriate, but we can shift from that head internal chatter to a heart awareness, to living from the heart, to living as a loving human being who feels, I love what Jesus said, only as a child you know the kingdom of heaven, who feels that we are in a benevolent universe, that life is beautiful and that we have gratitude for the beautiful blue sky, the water that I look out on, the sailboats that I can watch going by, every breath I take, that can be our primary way of existing. Issues will come up in our lives, but we will deal with them differently when we have shifted, if you will, when we've experienced that intuitive side that will bring us into balance. So now we have both our head, our logical, rational process, and our heart, our loving, kind, compassionate, wise part, the wisdom that speaks to us, will bring us a beautiful balance in this life. We'll become more efficient and more attuned to what we truly want to accomplish in life and what our health and fitness means to us. And we will become much less short-sighted, as a way of saying it, that when we look at our lives at 39 or 49 or 59 or 65, and we'll say, well, here's where I am. Wait a minute, this is my life. This is my time. I was born some time ago, and this, I right now am in the field of joy. I am looking out over the water. I am enjoying the cool fan. I enjoy the cool breeze coming off the water. I am enjoying a walk down the busy streets of New York, whatever it might be. This is me right here, right now. We can come into the moment and assess where we are, and by stopping and by following a meditation that I'm going to give you, we can come to a place where we shift. We literally shift from that, what we thought was our primary, what we think is our primary way of being, our primary identity. We can shift and learn that is a secondary identity. It's a superficial. In the Eastern religions, the Hindu, they call it Maya or illusion. That's not a really precise word for us, our Western minds, but it's as if we've accepted the concrete, sensual, emotional life as everything there is about life, when there's a so much more beautiful, fuller way of being in this world that is called self-realization or self-awakening or self-realization or God-realization, cosmic consciousness, whatever term you want to use. It is there, and it's real, and it's written of in a tomes and huge, voluminous body of work that talks about our ability to awaken to, you know, a new birth, a new way of being, a new self. Osho, formerly known as Rajneesh, talked about the new man, and he Yogananda talked about there will be a wildfire one day when this self-realization will overtake, will spread like wildfire, and there are forerunners of this on the planet today, many of them. And many critics of them, but nevertheless, there seem to be many of them. And this radio station is a beacon that attracts many of those, and a vehicle for us to speak out. It's a platform for us to speak out and say, there is a destiny of humankind that is being addressed with a greater and greater sense of urgency. Certainly, September 11th brought that to a new plateau, and I believe we are coming more and more to a time where times of war and fundamentalism and corporate greed and nationalism are seen for what they are, that they keep us from joining as a human race and enjoying this planet, both environmentally, but emotionally, spiritually, psychically. It is called a veil in some scriptures, that we need to break through a veil, or we break through the illusion that the Buddha is the awakened one, that there is an awakening that the Zen Buddhists talk about, but that we can move through. We can move into emptiness that is not nothing. It's impossible to put into words. Must be experienced. That's why it's called mystic, and why no one ever addresses it directly, because we can only speak of it in metaphor, by analogy. It must be directly experienced. And the awakened teachers of present day enlightenment on the planet today are writing more, speaking more of it. Ken Wilber comes to mind as someone who does not claim a guru status. He's a pundit, certainly a man of great knowledge and wisdom, who writes of it. There are many, many beautiful teachers on the planet today, and certainly many past masters who have written of it. There's no lack of a tremendous amount of literature and activists, mystics around today, and I think there are quite a few of them as I look through the different shows that are on BBS Radio. You know, tune in anytime, and you'll come into shows like Advanced Living or Beyond Reality or Between Two Worlds or Connecting the Light or Conscious Creating, the Cosmic Poet, Creative Cosmos. We are talking about an ability to enjoy life on a whole new level. So when I talk about goal setting as a grounding for that, it's a beginning point. So I just want to lay that foundation, and if it hasn't been too confusing as I kind of jumped all around. I'm doing this kind of extemporaneously today. I had a guest who was supposed to be on today, and just had something else come up and didn't make it. But it's wonderful because it gives me an opportunity to hog the mic and have it all to myself and talk about what's dearest to my heart and closest to me. You know, when we speak, I was talking about the head and the heart. When we speak of someone who is incredibly kind and compassionate and has great wisdom, we don't say they have a good brain. We say they have a good, that's right, heart. And I teach something called a mystic heart meditation. And I'd like to take you through it for those of you who'd like to listen. If you happen to have a laptop going and you're driving, use some good common sense here and only do portions of this. And it proceeds very simply, and as a matter of fact, the very first portion of it, the cue to it, by itself really is everything that this mystic heart meditation is about, and we come back to it. And I'll explain what I mean by that. So the mystic heart meditation, as I teach it, uses a mantra as a beginning point for those who are new to it. And a mantra is simply a word we repeat to help focus our attention. And this word, it's not a word. it's a word that's not a word. And I'll explain how that works. It's called Q-Baha. So just imagine it's Q apostrophe, B-A-H-A. And the Q, and I like to think of that as both the letter Q and Q as in C-U-E, as the beginning point. And that we pick up on a Q. And this meditation is an incredible stress management technique on an applied metaphysical level. I work with individuals and with companies. I do a lot of sales training and communication training in companies. I work with a lot of individuals on particular goals and things as simple as, well, it sounds simple, but two of the major health issues today, smoking and obesity. I work with people on a quit smoking program, and I have them do this mystic heart meditation. I work with people on a weight loss program. I am doing this mystic heart meditation. I work with people on stress management. I am doing this mystic heart meditation. And I work with athletes. I work with a lot of golfers. I work with some pro golfers, some teaching pros, and I have them do this meditation. So it has a great broad application as an applied metaphysical. It's really not metaphysical, but maybe looked at that way, depending on your orientation. So let's begin with it. Step one, very easy. It's called quiet awareness. Now, quiet awareness is just what it sounds like. All it requires is that you stop. Stop what you're doing at your desk. And this you can do several times during the day, anytime it occurs to you. It's a great way to go to sleep. So step one, the cue, is quiet awareness. And that means just stopping and going silent and letting your mind go silent and just being aware of where you are right now, right this moment. Just taking in your environment, the sights, the sounds, the smell, the light, the different things going on, but without a narration, without an internal dialogue, just being quietly aware. Just quietly aware. If you will try this a few times, and those of you who have listened to me for some time or have listened to me for years, and some of you, thank you for your emails, who have tuned in to my show and sent emails from all over the place, people that I've run across in different parts of the country and even some from other parts of the world, it just delights me to get an email the next morning that you've listened to my show. So thank you so much for tuning in, Paul, if you're listening. That's wonderful. Thank you so much for that beautiful email. And people in Wichita, people in Texas, California, Maine, I appreciate it. Quiet awareness, step one. You're teaching a new meditation called Mystic Heart Meditation. If you're anywhere near St. Pete, Florida, I teach it every Monday night. And you can find information on my website about it. It's called, my website is MindGoal, MindGoal.com. Quiet awareness. I'm going to be beautifully redundant for the next 20 minutes to teach you this meditation technique. Those of you who are familiar, and just follow along and you'll know where we're going with it. And let me come back. I lost track. I remember I went out on track and said there were three audiences and I talked about one and never came back. Or maybe I'm still on that first one. One would be those who know exactly what I'm speaking of, who have experienced it and know it in whatever their tradition or spiritual path or mystic path or intellectual inquiry is, they know of what I speak. And hearing about it does not affront them. As a matter of fact, it typically, and I know when I hear from someone, I can sense over a very short period of time that they're awakened. I love to hear that. I love to know that there are more of us on the planet that are involved in the same type of work. The second group, if you will, out of this three, would be those who have a sense of something missing, have this longing to a different degree, varying degrees, and what I'm talking about resonates with them as being something real, something that they have great interest in, and so they listen and they want to hear more. And I've had some very kind reviews of my books that say that they like reading them because they can't wait to turn the page, and it keeps drawing them in. And those are people who are searching, who are looking for that sense they have of something missing, and so they tune in. The third group would be those who had a taste, if you will, of the mystic path, had an enlightened moment or period of time in their life where they really felt very connected, and what I'm saying really resonates with them, is truthful, but they feel they've lost touch with it, they've kind of fallen away from it, and that's really unfortunate. My model for that says that you learn to tame the lines of fear and doubt. You quieted them down. The heart became the master. The head became the servant. But over time, because the lions never give up, they always try to reassert and try to gain mastery or control. Over time, they gained a great deal of control, and now they've convinced you that you no longer have this. And my job is to say, no, you've tamed them once, you can tame them again. Just don't try to replicate what happened before, because that will keep you in a conceptual mind. That will keep you in a trying to figure it out, and you have to go back to that place of the beginner's mind, of the empty cup, of the faith as the substance of things hoped for, and move away from anything that would attempt to replicate or repeat an earlier experience. You must be open to growth beyond what you had. In some models, in a Hindu model, the distinction here, and I've given you the three types. The distinction here would be one is called a savikalpa samadhi or an enlightened awakening moment. Savikalpa would be essentially while in meditation, the beautiful, beautiful feeling of oneness and the sense of unity and harmony comes over you, and it just feels absolutely beautiful, and it feels very enlightening, and it's a moment, if you will, of awakening. But coming out of the meditation, or maybe after a few minutes, or for some people a few days, others a few months, it's lost. It just feels like I just don't have it anymore. And then there's an event called Nirvikalpa Samadhi, which is the transformation, which is the, I believe, right down to the cellular level. Everything changes. Our DNA changes. Maybe not chemically, and I'm not speaking physiologically, but just everything changes. That what we thought was our primary identity becomes our secondary identity, and we come to a new birth, a new life, a transformed human being. And because we have a teacher or a guide, or because that was particularly powerful, we have stayed in that place. And I think I don't know that certainly I think anyone who has experienced a powerful transformation never totally loses it, always has a sense of it, because even if they're in that second category that I mentioned, if they feel they've lost it, they still have a sense of what I'm saying. And my job, and we all struggle with that, and my job would be, if you will, is to say, no, don't get stuck in the concept. Don't try to replicate. Don't try to repeat your earlier experience, because that's not what it's all about. There is another step, and what's happened to you is that you feel that you made the final step, yet you lost it, and that might be a clue to you that, no, that wasn't the final step, because there is a permanent place. There is a place of finding that you never leave. And Jesus, again, who happens to be one of my favorite teachers, if you haven't picked up on that, and I need to editorialize right here, that I do not believe Jesus meant to have any kind of an exclusive club among any kind of religions, that Jesus the Christ was talking about the Christ. When he said, I am the way and the truth and life, he was talking about the Christ, the transformation. When he said that the things that I do, you will do, and even more, he was talking about us coming to Christ consciousness. When he said that the student becomes as a teacher, he was talking about us who have awakened to Christ consciousness. That is not the man Jesus speaking, that only through Jesus can you come to the Father. And I know I've got some fundamentalist Christians flipping out if they're listening. They're probably not listening at this point. That Jesus did not mean for us to have a separatist, exclusive club that says, unless you'll accept Jesus as your Lord and Savior, you can't come to heaven, or I won't accept you. I believe that that is a train wreck, and I believe that the church who teaches that is a train wreck and does not represent what the enlightened teacher, the mystic man Jesus, had to say. I believe that is totally false, that he was as open to all religious paths and the mystic opening as any teacher who ever walked the planet. And I believe if he crosses space and time, that he is acknowledging that and nodding, and is present right here now. And that's my thought on that. Now, where was I before I went into that brief rant that I feel is so important? I believe that we, as a human race, regardless of our tradition, other than fundamentalist, if we break off as an exclusive club, we have blocked the door, we have guarded the door from others who can enter. And any time man claims to have infallible truth in their possession, especially by a book or any other instrument, or worshiping something that they have gone into idolatry, and they are just the opposite of what the enlightened teachers brought to this earth and are bringing to this earth today. That might bring some response to some quieter listeners. Let's go back to the meditation, the mystic path, the mystic heart meditation. We talked about quiet awareness. It's simply that. Quiet awareness is simply that quiet time, that quiet few moments of the ceasing of the internal chatter and just being right where you are, right at that moment. And what you'll notice by practicing it a few times, and I'm going to say it a few times, and those who would like to participate, I ask you to participate as we do it a few times, that you will begin to notice a physiological response, that you will feel yourself, your body, if you will, your whole being, just soften, just kind of slip into a more peaceful place. As I said, that simple quiet awareness, that simple moment of quiet awareness, if we could sustain that, and we can, if we could sustain that simple quiet awareness, we come to incredible clarity. All the big questions in our life are answered. Solutions to problems that we've been working on forever will pop into our minds. Life will present itself. We will trust life. We will trust our spontaneity, trust our judgment. We will give up the soap opera life, if you will, the god of what will other people think, and we will come into a whole new way of being simply by that that simple act of quiet awareness. You could do that this moment, and that would be awesome if someone would email me and say, wow, I just did that quiet awareness, and I slipped into a whole new identity. I don't necessarily expect that, but I don't dismiss the possibility. So I'm going to come back to quiet awareness because it's the cue, it's the beginning. That's the beginning of the cue baha. So you may have noticed, even though I've been talking through all of it, as you go into quiet awareness, that after a few moments in that quiet awareness, the narration comes in. There's something comes up. Either you're wondering where I'm going with this, or you know, something that's going on in your day comes into your mind. And so simply sustaining that quiet awareness and not thinking is not easy. And we just don't do that. Our mind begins to chatter again. And meditation is about taming those lines that are chattering, taming that fear and doubt, and coming to a beautiful quiet place of peace and clarity. And so quiet awareness may only last a few seconds, and what I'm going to offer you is a means to sustain that, to lengthen it, to make it, to stay in that quiet awareness longer. And this simply is with breath awareness. And we're going to overlay this. We don't abandon the quiet awareness. We maintain the quiet awareness. And then step two would be to then go to add, if you will, overlay breath awareness. Now, breath awareness is just as it sounds, again, very simple. Being aware of when you're inhaling and when you're exhaling. Now, as we begin to do that, we start to hold our breath a little bit, and it alters our natural rhythm, and it takes a little while sometimes to just come to that place of following our breathing. And a cue sometimes, like, you know, as a cue to the cue braha, I will ask students to inhale with an inrush of air that's loud enough so they hear it, so that they just kind of move into that breath awareness with a and then just gently exhale and just stay in the quiet awareness. And now just keep returning to notice an inhale and an exhale. You can do this with your eyes open or your eyes closed. We can visualize beautifully with eyes open or eyes closed. And in later shows, we're going to guided imagery more and more visualization as time permits. So now, quiet awareness to breath awareness. Just noticing when you're inhaling and noticing when you're exhaling. To focus that even more, to move into the quiet place, sustain it. So for some people, different people react differently to this. For some people, simply feeling the physical vibration, if you will, when you inhale, you can, as the air comes in, you kind of feel a very subtle vibration that kind of moves up from the top of your stomach through your chest into your throat. And if you, with some imagination, you can just let it go right up to the top of your head or the middle of your forehead. If your eyes are closed, just kind of keep your gaze there as if you're looking out through the middle of your forehead. And so with the quiet awareness and the breath awareness, just feel the subtle breath rise up, and as you exhale, feel it drop back down. Just follow that vibration. And vibration and energy are something we'll talk about again later in other shows. So we have the quiet awareness, and we overlaid it with breath awareness. So we've got the cue ba. So we have the two. And I would suggest that if this is new to you, if meditation is new to you, that for this next week, maybe if you're listening between this show and next week's show, that really be your meditation, to spend a few minutes. And you can do this anytime it occurs to you during the day. No one notices it other than you. No one's aware of it. You can do it doing anything. While someone's talking to you, you can go into quiet awareness and breath awareness, and you'll comprehend what they say. You will not go into a stupefied state of beatitude. You will be nice and alert and very relaxed, because you won't be into what if of a few minutes ago, or if only, what will happen in the future, or what happened to that. You'll just kind of stay in the quiet awareness of the moment and just following your breathing. And again, it's subtle, but if you'll attune to it, and this is what we're doing, is attuning, if you will attune to it, you'll notice that this is very relaxing, very subtly relaxing, and with practice it becomes very deeply relaxing. And with practice, it becomes a way of being in the world without even thinking the words or going through the steps. You just notice that you're just gently breathing, quietly breathing, without any sound whatsoever, and that your gaze just kind of picks up what's going on, and you begin to feel an incredible grace in your life. And I mean that grace in terms of a gift that's coming to you in terms of inner peace, but also a grace in terms of just your physical being, just your physical presence, the way you move. I work with golfers and with athletes, and I tell them that just the simple cue baja, this cue ba that we've gone to, if we will just move into that and quiet the inner chatter, that our natural ability will come. When I work with a pro golfer who knows the mechanics, who has rehearsed the mechanics thousands and thousands and thousands of times, if I can get them to leave that in place, but then open up that intuitive side, open up that experience of intuitive consciousness, that they will come to a balance. Now the balance between the head and the heart, and you can see the line as we follow our breathing from the heart to the middle of the forehead, from the middle of the forehead down to the heart, our center of our being. That if I can get them to practice that as they step up to the ball and not run the linear process, to let their natural ability and the natural learning, I mean, once we've learned to drive a car, there are different things, tie our shoes, we don't go through the process of loop the side over and under. We don't do that anymore. It just becomes part of a natural process. And the natural athlete will do their natural best by just moving into this quiet place. When I work with smokers or people who overeat, same thing. Every time they're involved in smoking or involved in anything having to do with food, those of you who are listening, this is from some free coaching. Looking at food in a magazine, preparing food, looking at the fruit bowl, preparing food, eating food, sitting down with food, use that as a cue to go into this cue baja, and I'll come to the HA in just a moment. Use any time you're involved with food as a cue to just go quietly aware, and extend that awareness to the texture of the food, the weight of your silverware, the temperature of the glass that you pick up, the design on your plate, and keep your awareness of what you're doing, and notice when you're satiated. Notice when you are satisfied with what you've had to eat, and stop. Simple as that. I've had tremendous results for people who overeat and don't exercise enough. I start by saying, eat less, move more, and move into awareness with food. And I challenge them to push themselves away from the table with half of a strawberry shortcake still on their plate. This isn't a weight loss clinic, so I'll move on from there. Same with smokers. I tell them that as soon as they reach for a pack, the one thing I do, the rule that I give is no harsh self-talk, even if they light up a cigarette, even if they overeat. They say, I'm in a weight loss program and it's working. I'm in a quit smoking program and it's working. So if a smoker reaches for a cigarette, well, all I ask them to do is go into cue baja, to go into that quiet awareness, to notice what they're doing, to notice the texture of the pack, the crisp of the cellophane, the whiteness of the cigarette. Now, smokers will want to smoke now, because once they start thinking about smoking, that's what makes quitting so difficult, because most programs say, put all the butts in the jar so you see all the ugly stuff and think about smoking all the time. And I take a different tack and say, when you smoke, if you smoke, just be aware. And I've had smokers that I've said to them, I've asked them to say, once you take the cigarette out and you see the blue flame, say to yourself, I'm not willing to light this cigarette, and wait 5 minutes. I've had people just quit just on that. I have people watch other smokers. Well, that's a very powerful motivation. When they see people who squint and tip their head when there's no wind, who hunch over, who do have different mannerisms while smoking, people come back and just tell me they quit smoking, just like that. And I won't get into a thing about addiction. That's another for another time. So I've covered. And with stress, again, it's a relaxation technique. The cue baja is a relaxation technique. So I have just a few more minutes, and I just want to move into the last part of it. So the cue baja is a quiet awareness and breath awareness. The ha is heart awareness. Now, as I said, the quiet awareness is very subtle, and it takes some time before you can notice the physiological downshift, if you will, just the peacefulness. The breath awareness, the vibration, is very subtle. And some people almost like to imagine a ball of light, no mass to it, just a softly diffused light that sits on the top of their stomach as they inhale, and they watch that light go to the middle of their forehead. I'll get in another time some powerful responses I've had to that. And just watch, if that appeals to you, just watch the flow of light as you inhale. Just watch that flow of light just come to the middle of your forehead. And as you exhale, just watch it settle back down. Now, you can do that with your eyes open or closed. We can visualize with our eyes open. Okay? Heart awareness is even more subtle. And this can take, well, there are people who can attune their very first meditation. More typically, this takes quite some time and some practice in meditation to attune to heart awareness. The heart, as I said, when we think of people who are kind and compassionate and wise, the heart is the seat of wisdom. That's the heart I'm speaking of, the center of our being. But you can think of it in the area of your physical heart. Heart awareness simply means going into the Kubaha, going into the quiet awareness, the breath awareness, and then listening, you know, overlaying quiet awareness with breath awareness, and then listening for what I call a wisdom whisper. The heart will speak to the mind, not with words, but with wisdom. And the mind can grasp. The words are tough because they don't really fit. The mind can grasp or experience, if you will, a wisdom, what I like to call a wisdom whisper from the heart that shifts our being, that says there's more to life than your consciousness is aware of right now. Here's a new light. Here's a way to look at your life in a new light. Here's the truth that sets you free. Here's birth of the spirit. Here's Christ consciousness. Here's cosmic consciousness. Here's Krishna consciousness. Here's non-dual realization. Here's awakening, enlightenment, self-realization. That comes from the heart. And when the heart speaks that, it changes the mind completely. It changes our view of life. We go from what we thought life was about to a new view of life. What we thought was primary becomes secondary. Paul in Christianity, the New Testament, I have a lot of argument with him, but in this point I agree. He said we rise above circumstances. And that is difficult to describe, except that what happens is we watch circumstances without an attachment to the outcome. We no longer need to control life. We no longer serve the God of what will other people think. Krishnamurti, a beautiful philosopher and teacher, was asked how he stayed in such constant equanimity, how he was able to just view life from this beautiful place all the time. And his simple answer was just so beautiful, and I'm going to offer this as my final words today before I go off the show. I'm coming up just at about that time right now. His answer was, and I ask you to consider this week, and email me if you have any questions. I moved fast today and moved through some things, and I'm more than happy to respond to any email that comes in. It's Jeff@MindGoal, MindGoal, like you have a goal in mind, .com. It's Jeff@MindGoal.com. Any questions or any discussion points you'd like to cover with me, I'm always more than happy to hear from you, and I'll respond just as quickly as possible. Krishnamurti's words were, I ask you to enjoy this week. I look forward to seeing you next time. I don't mind what happens.
You have been listening to BBS Radio, a blogandservice.com production and a service to others endeavor. Thank you very much for tuning into our radio program, and we wish you much peace and joy on your journey.